Faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
And welcome. Glad you are with us. Here we are live on, what is the date today? Today is November 8th, 2021. We're live. We have Mike. I'm doing this. I want to say Mike Lindell because I'm so used to saying his name all the time. I'm sorry. I've been calling him Mike all day. But we have with us Tom Littleton. Tom, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Brannon.
Good to have you with us. Tom's been here recording some of his next TV shows. As many of you know, we produce the TV shows of a lot of folks, and Tom is here producing his next series of TV shows. Got into the studio at 7 this morning, so he's already knocked out 8 30-minute TV shows. We are going to talk today a little bit about, well, the fact that folks are finally catching on to the threat from the evangelical world, or should I say the neo-evangelical world, so as not to confuse everybody. Folks are finally catching on to the threat from the neo-evangelical world. You know, for so many years, I've warned about the dangerous worldview and theology of Rick Warren. And as you know, many of you that are alumni, I just got pummeled for years for talking about Rick Warren. How dare you talk about America's pastor like that? Rick is a godly man. God is using Rick Warren, you know? I got that all the time. But it wasn't that I had anything against Rick. Rick and I even emailed with each other at one time. It was that so it wasn't personal. In fact, when Rick tragically lost his son, I went on the air and asked everybody to pray for Rick and his wife and pray for that family and how just absolutely devastating that would be as a parent. So it's never been personal. It's always been theological when it comes to Rick Warren, and it's been philosophical. And yet I was called harsh, judgmental, unloving, divisive. Well, my friends, the fruit of Rick Warren, which we saw years ago, as I was talking about him in 2006 and 2007, people are now seeing this. I was talking about him so many years ago, even before 2000, but really we started talking about him in the early 2000s, particularly 2004, 2005. And now he's getting attention from a lot of folks. Let me play a video of Rick Warren with Francis Collins of NIH, Fauci's buddy. And this is coming a montage from my friend Clay Clark. Watch this from Clay Clark. He put these clips together. And again, he's just one of many hosts now openly talking about this. Stu Peters was talking about it the other day. But I just want to remind you, I was one of the first. And how dare House say anything negative about Rick Warren? Well, we knew all this. He wasn't doing all this back then. Yes, he was. He was doing the World Economic Forum. He was doing Davos. That's the point. We were talking about the World Economic Forum when no one knew what it was or cared about it. So the point I'm trying to make today isn't just patting myself on the back, but it is to say when we try to tell people years in advance, this is not good. This is what they're doing. This is what they're saying. This is who they work with. This is what they're wanting to do. And we try to warn before the wolves come into the sheep pen, we get beat up. Now everybody wants to warn about him after he's already eating the sheep. Watch this.
Let me say a personal word about Dr. Francis Collins. We have been friends, he and I have been friends for many, many years. I think we first met years ago when we were both speaking at the Davos World Economic Forum.
I'm here at Davos with a lot of my friends, and we're talking about what are the biggest problems on the planet and how are we going to solve them. Extreme poverty, pandemic diseases. There's a role for the public sector, there's a role for the private sector, and there's a role for the faith sector. Each of them can do something that none of the other three can do. Government has a role to set agenda. Government has a role to set priorities and things like that and move nations. But then also, houses of worship have things that businesses and government will never have. In the first place, we have universal distribution. The church was global 200 years before Davos ever talked about globalization. So we have to mobilize these faith groups to work together on these issues that have been unsolvable. The church has, of course, the greatest distribution. We also have the biggest manpower. We have hundreds of millions of people who volunteer around the world in villages and cities on a weekly basis, and we don't have to pay them. The third thing that they have is they have local credibility. At the local level, people trust that priest or that pastor, or for that matter, an imam or a rabbi, the religious leader of their faith, because he's marrying, he's burying, he's helping them through the stages of life. When the crisis comes, NGOs come and go, nations come and go, but for instance, the church has a 2,000-year track record. So I really think that what we need to do here at Davos is to work on a three-legged stool. The problem we haven't solved these issues before is because we've had a two-legged stool. We've had government and business trying to work together, and that's a good thing, but a two-legged stool will fall over. You have to have the faith sector, you have to have the public sector, and you have to have the private sector.
And we were two of the few Christians that were actually there at the time, and we just hit it off and spent some time together while we were there.
King, we're All talking right. about improving biology and redesigning organisms for beneficial purposes. It's going to allow us to not just edit genomes, but also, and importantly, write a new code for life. We'll have write-level permissions. We already started to see some of that this year. COVID-19 vaccines, they make use of engineered code in the form.
Whoa, engineered code. They openly are telling you what it is they're going to do. Engineering code. Yeah, engineered code. And of course, there was Rick Warren right in the middle of it all, promoting the idea, the concept of what? The three-legged stool. And I was trying to get that video to keep playing, but it looks like it's quit. All right, so if you go back to my book that I wrote in 2008, that came out in 2009, what do you find? I'm warning about Rick Warren and his three-legged stool, public-private partnerships. The government, big business, and the religion sector. You just heard him talk about the three-legged stool. This audience, the alumni, know I talk about and have been talking about the three-legged stool forever. But now we have people like Clay Clark and Stu Peters and other guys coming out on their shows talking about this, thankfully, and more. And what it shows, again, is when we tell you about people and we document, don't have the knee-jerk reaction, oh, I like him, you're divisive. No, we're lifting up a warning, a shout. What do wolves do, folks? They eat sheep. And we were trying to warn you about him, Rick Warren. Now, before we continue this conversation, I guess I've neglected to tell you where I have been. For those of you on our radio networks, out of VCY America Radio Network, where have I been? Because I was off the air on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and some of you thought, oh my, something's happened to House, he never misses. Well, some of you may know by now, we left Tuesday evening in our motor coach that we contract with out of Nashville, and our two drivers came and got us and picked us up. And about 5 p.m. Central Time, we pulled out of the Memphis, Tennessee area. Logan and I and Melissa and my daughter and our film guy and two drivers, and we made our way to Palm Beach, West Palm Beach. We got there a day early to rest up and make sure we got there and didn't have any mechanical problems, because on Thursday we drove our drivers drove the motor coach into the grounds at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time into Mar-a-Lago. We then spent the next several hours setting up. We first had to get all of our gear off, spread it out the length of the bus, really, for a security dog, a bomb-sniffing dog, to come by, screen all of our gear, screen our bus, and then the Secret Service and Trump's, some of his representatives, brought us into Mar-a-Lago, where we spent several hours setting up. After several hours of setting up, then Mike Lindell came in, and we did a little rehearsing, and then President Trump came in the room, and that was our first time to meet him, and he was, of course, super kind and generous and laid back and put everybody at ease, and he said, hey guys, you know, I'm running behind. I know I'm supposed to do the interview now. Do you guys mind if I push it back to later tonight? I got to speak at this gala, this America's First Gala. And he said, I'll have more time afterwards. So we said, absolutely. So we had dinner there at Mar-a-Lago. And then after dinner, we waited for President Trump to come in. And he did. And we filmed a great 40-minute interview. 40 minutes between Mike Lindell and President Trump. And then after that, after the recording stopped, we got pictures with him, visited with him. He was so quick on everybody's names. And put everybody at ease, very complimentary People say, well, what was one of the things that stood out? How complimentary he was of the people in the room. He was affirming the other people in the room. He found something to say positive about other people in the room. And there was only six of us in the room. My Logan, my wife, my daughter, Mike Lindell, and my camera guy, Michael Nini, who's been working with me since he was 19 and he's now 36. And then, of course, President Trump had a couple Secret Service guy or two and then a personal aide. But he, as far as our group of six, he found something to say positive about us. And that was, became common. And that's, I think, in one regard, a sign of true leadership when someone is confident in themselves and that they put the focus on others and find something to say about others in the room. And he kept doing that, affirming other people. He was very, very complimentary of Mike Lindell over and over. That comes out in the interview. Encouraging Mike, thanking Mike for his courage, his fearlessness. And then when, as I said, the interview was over, he signed some stuff for us, signed a Trump hat for my daughter, signed a book about the history of Mar-a-Lago that my wife had bought for me there on the grounds. And he then, to my surprise, Mike Lindell says to him, Brandon works really hard. He was about to tell him I work really hard running Lindell TV. And he said, Brandon works nonstop. And he went on to say something. President Trump says, I know who he is. He says, I've watched him a lot. And I actually was like, what? I said, really? Seriously? I said, really? Seriously? How? And he said, I watched that show, that Frankathon. Great job. And he slaps me on the shoulder a couple times and he signs the book and hands it back to me. And he was very complimentary of my wife and I and our parenting. And he kept talking about the kids, my grown son and my grown daughter. And at one point he says, great job with these kids. And I said, well, I think the mom gets all the credit. He said, I could see that. He at one point calls Logan by name and says, hey, Logan, take my picture with Mike. He wanted a picture with Mike Lindell and himself. Well, they had many over the years, but he wanted another one. So did Mike, of course. But I thought it was interesting that he was very aware of the people's names and he'd heard me using Logan's name. And I, of course, introduced him. But he picked up on it and started, hey, Logan. The point I'm making is he was very aware of who was in the room. He was engaging them by name and he was affirming them and complimenting them and putting others, to the front of noticing and complimenting. And I thought that's a mark of a leader. That's a mark of a good leader who knows how to affirm and highlight good things about other people. And he was very laid back, put everybody at ease. He was funny. He was very funny. At one point, he invited Mike and my daughter and wife out onto the balcony there at Mar-a-Lago to see the crowd that he was about to speak to. He's like, why don't you guys come up? He said, you guys, you want to go to the gala with me? Looking at my wife and daughter, he said, you guys are dressed so nice. You're dressed for it. He said, why don't you come out here with me and look at the gala that I'm about to speak at? And all the people had assembled on the grounds outside, beautiful setup out there. And so Mike Lindell and my wife and daughter walk through Mar-a-Lago with him, and he gives them a little tour. And he was just in great spirits, and he looked very well rested. He really looked well rested. And you guys are going to be really pleased, I think, when you see this 40-minute interview. So we left Tuesday night. That's why I was off the air Wednesday, Thursday. We got back at 4:30 Friday. I was back on TV by Friday night, but I wanted to bring my radio audience into the loop. I should have done all that at the beginning. All right, now we'll get back to Rick Warren and Francis Collins and the NIH. Don't go away. All right, I just gave the 1 minute sign to the TV audience because, again, TV is coming back quicker than radio. So I just warned the TV audience. I know we're on camera. We have a monitor. We're just waiting for television and BCY America Network to catch up with us. But anyway, we'll be releasing an article today. Leo Holman has written a great article about kind of a behind-the-scenes look at going to Mar-a-Lago and doing this interview. And we'll be announcing tonight on Mike Lindell's show when we'll be releasing the 40-minute interview. And so it was a lot of fun. We'll be releasing a lot of pictures as well. We already have released some on social media, but we got a lot of pictures, and we'll be releasing some of those. By the way, when he signed my book about the history of Mar-a-Lago, he pulled out a black Sharpie, and it was a black Sharpie with his name on it, his autograph on the pen, and then it said the White House. So obviously he has a bunch of these left over where he would sign stuff with a black Sharpie, which he's notorious for signing everything with a black Sharpie, right? So he's signing my book. He personalized it to me, Brannon, great work, and then he signs it. And when he's done signing it, he hands it to me and says, you keep this. And I said, absolutely, I'll keep it. And so now it's in a case, the book and the pen he signed it with going in a case. But there's a story behind those Sharpies, by the way, because he was not going to waste a bunch of money on expensive pens. So he had these pens made, I'm told, and he just went like total conservative, price, and not doing the crazy prices that I guess other people have done on their White House pens. And so I'd already heard the story about these White House Sharpies, and so now I've got one. But
Fancy pens usually don't write anyway.
They don't write good anyway. Of course, I'm not going to be writing with this Sharpie. But anyway, all right, so Tom Littleton is joining us. Tom, what do you make of, the fact that now Rick Warren's getting on people's radar because he's hanging out with Francis Collins? Maybe remind our listening audience who Francis Collins is.
Yeah, well, Collins is the guy who actually started BioLogos, and he's an old friend of Tim Keller's as well as Warren. So he's one of these globalist Christians who obviously has had great influence. With BioLogos, he was instrumental in trying to merge Darwin evolution with the idea of biblical creation and merge science and faith together. And that in a generic way. He's not really, he's supposed to be an evangelical Christian spokesperson, but he really rose to the forefront during the pandemic response and then the vaccine because of his heading the National Institutes of Health and his close work with Fauci. So he was being promoted as a trusted evangelical voice related to the COVID and to the vaccine. Mm.
Well, you notice that Rick Warren, in those clips we just played, continues to talk about the public, private, and faith, or which we've talked about as the three-legged stool, because that's what he calls it. You know, big government, big business, and the social sector. But again, this is what I wrote about in my book in 2008 that came out in 2009, Grave Influence. My book that came out in 2011, Religious Trojan Horse. My book that came out in 2015, The Coming Religious Reich. I mean, you and I, independently of each other, of course, my book 2018, Marxianity. You and I, independently of each other, not knowing each other, were promoting and writing on the same things. And we got a lot of criticism over it. I don't know about you. Did you get hit hard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, because
how dare you mention Rick Warren in a negative way, right?
Right. Well, if he's so popular, how can he be doing something wrong? I mean, that's a lot of people's thinking. And of course, for years, his purpose-driven book was actually being studied as Sunday school material. And almost every church marquee you would go by would have 40 Days of Purpose written on the on the marquee. So clearly he had a huge influence in launching a vision that was really nothing more than grooming the church for faith-based partnerships and the three-legged stool.
Well, and of course, in my book, I mentioned Rick Warren's purpose-driven church, purpose-driven life, and a lot of people don't know the liberal things that he's promoting in there. He's promoting all kinds of guys in there in that book. And I don't guess people maybe look up the names of some of these people, but here, Logan, if you want to show a screenshot of this, here's my book, Religious Trojan Horse, and I write Purpose-Driven Socialism. Now, remember, this book came out in 2011. As unpopular as it may be for me to say so, Pastor Rick Warren, author of the best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life, is another false teacher garbed in sheep's clothing and an extremely influential one at that. His website claims he has 500,000 churches plugged into what he's doing. His books have sold millions of copies. He appears regularly on national television and travels the globe holding and speaking at various conferences. Warren is one of the greatest change agents of our day, but change is not necessarily for the better. As of this writing, Warren sits on the advisory board of the Tony Blair Faith Foundation. That raises the legitimate question, why would any solid evangelical Bible-believing pastor sit on the advisory board of a foundation that seeks to bring the religions of the world together? And then I go on to lay out the scripture against that. And then I write this. An article in the February 14th, 2011 Christian Post titled Rick Warren to interview Tony Blair at Saddleback Church announced, quote, megachurch pastor Rick Warren will speak to former Prime Minister Tony Blair on Egypt and peace and globalized economy next month at Saddleback Church. Warren is expected to award Blair with the annual International Medal of Peace. The award is given to the individuals who exemplify outstanding contributions toward alleviating the five global giants, end quote. And then I go on from there to quote some other folks and talk about Rick Warren. But in his book, he really, I'm going to try to scan through this and show, let's see. Logan, you don't have to show this. Let me see if I can use my Control F and find. Oh, here we go. Now you can go back to it. Page 94 of my book. It is also interesting that to note that in The Purpose-Driven Life, Warren makes positive references to three Fabian socialists. He quotes George Bernard Shaw on page 33, Aldous Huxley on page 248, and Bertrand Russell on page 17. While Warren acknowledges that Russell was an atheist, he quotes him as saying, unless you assume a God, the question of life's purposes is meaningless. Warren quotes Aldous Huxley as saying, quote, experience is not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. And he quotes George Bernard Shaw as writing, this is the true joy of life, the being used up for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clot of elements and grievances, complaining that the world will never devote itself to making you happy, end quote. And of course, I find it interesting that, by the way, that Warren has belonged to the Council on Foreign Relations. So here's Rick Warren quoting three Fabian socialists positively in his book, and he's giving an award to Tony Blair, who is himself a Fabian socialist, who himself, Tony Blair, unveiled the Fabian window after it had been stolen and shown back up. And we have pictures of Blair unveiling the Fabian window and affirming the Fabian window and the Labor Party and acknowledging that the Labor Party came out of the Fabian Socialist Society and says, I hope we are at the Labor Party still, you know, carrying on the goals of the Fabian Society, which, if you know anything about the Fabian Society, which started in London in the mid-1800s by people like Beatrice Webb, Sidney Webb, and others, the Fabian Society is about globalism. And in their Fabian window, designed by George Bernard Shaw in 1910, where you have the two men banging on the hot earth that's coming out of a fire, a manufactured crisis, and says in the Fabian window, remold it near to the heart's desire. So use the manufactured crisis to remold the world. Sound familiar today? You have a wolf in sheep's clothing as the logo above the earth on fire. And now you have Tony Blair promoting the Global Faith Foundation he has, bring the religions of the world together. Tony Blair, by the way, as I pointed out in my book, The Coming Religious Reich, is one of the guys pushing for hate crime legislation that would stop us on a global scale from saying anything negative about Islam. And you have Rick Warren praising the three Fabians in his book, The Purpose-Driven Life, and praising and giving an award to Fabian Tony Blair. Any wonder why we were calling him a wolf in sheep's clothing, Rick Warren, years ago? And now he's working with NIH guy, Fauci guy,
Francis Collins. Mm-hmm.
No wonder we were warning about him.
Yeah, and even though he was operating as a wolf in sheep's clothing with all these associations years ago, people didn't want to see it. Now it's more obvious as this global agenda is unfolding that he is a major player in this and working with things like the COVID collaborative that we've talked about, kind of the mothership that's directing the pandemic response and the rollout of the vaccines and stuff. So this guy's a key player, and he had already built such a broad audience among evangelicals, even conservative Baptists, Southern Baptists, that people have followed him blindly into these, these deceptions. Unfortunately, we see he's not the only player, but he's certainly one of the major ones. And he moves in and out of these circles very easily. Of course, the basic ideology that he's promoting is that of Peter Drucker, the management guru that he learned all this three-legged stool ideology from, who was sort of a pre-Frankfurt School player with his family, who fled to America when Hitler took over in Germany. They were in Austria. He fled to America, and they ended up in American academic institutions. So that's where, I think at Fuller in, Seminary, is where the guys like Rick Warren first heard and were discipled by Peter Drucker. So this is the trickle-down 35, 40 years later of this influence and that of Leadership Network and how it's manifesting itself in the church.
And I think at some point, I quote in one of my books that Warren even admitted he was a member of, was it SDS? Did you know that? You didn't know that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's in one of my books. I'll see if I can find it as I'm on the TV here live. But he admitted he was a member of one of these groups, and I can't find where he ever renounced that group. But Rick Warren, I think, is a change agent. I warned about it. And what's so interesting is that now it's hitting within conservative talk radio, if you will, or conservative podcasts. People are saying, what's up with Rick Warren? This is a real problem. Let me continue from this clip put together by Clay Clark and talking about it with Stu Peters the other day, including on our network over at Lindell TV. Watch this.
They make use of engineered code in the form of messenger RNA.
I want to say I personally know Francis Collins to be a man of integrity.
And then, of course, what you're going to see on the screen here is talks about Francis Collins untruthful about funding gain of function research. New docs disclose more grants to Wuhan lab. So he's been caught up in the whole funding of the Communist Party Wuhan lab, correct?
Right. And he has announced his resignation, I think effective at the end of this month, if I'm not mistaken. And yet he's denying in an interview on Fox that with Neil Cavuto that there's any connection between the timing of his resignation and these revelations about the gain of function funding, and that he had been deceptive, untruthful about whether or not his organization had funded it. Of course, this guy's an Obama appointee. So,
he also was funding, according to this screenshot, pro-life groups call for removal of NIH chief over fetal tissue research. So,
right.
You know, for being this great so-called conservative Christian or evangelical Christian working with BioLogos promoting Darwinian evolution, here he is reportedly using fetal tissue research. Not
right.
Very pro-life, is it?
Right. And he's promoting, of course, the vaccine, which is based on fetal tissue lines in its development. And these guys are obviously placed ahead of time, I think, so that they will get a lot of hearing by evangelicals. So this is a sort of globalist grooming, as it were, so that Christians will just buy into this stuff and say, hey, this guy's a brother. He's a brother in Christ. He's a believer. These guys have a very valid point. You know, they're going to reason through it with you. And of course, we see that the only guy left standing, I think, in this whole circle right now is Fauci. We can only hope that he's the next one to resign.
Absolutely. Let's watch the rest of this clip. Where'd my audio go? Hang on. It's probably on my end, Logan. Let me, let's see here. Take off the...
Meanwhile, Collins has been interviewed across the spectrum. Collins has been interviewed across the spectrum by evangelical leaders, especially in the last year.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let me plug this back in and skip, because it's got a bunch of music that, as it shows graphics, which means nothing to the TV audience, the radio audience, but I'll cue that part of it up. We'll play it when we come back. I'll see if I can find that thing about Rick Warren and SDS as well. But the point we're trying to make is we've been warning about a religious Trojan horse for years.
Yeah.
We got kicked in the teeth by it over and over. I remember Tim Wildman of the American Family Association just chewing me out one day because I dared to question Rick Warren. But again, how many of these pro-family guys were doing that? They didn't want to see it, did they?
Right.
And now a lot of them want to lead the parade.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Right. And sadly, people just don't want to take a hard look at the facts. They don't want to do the research.
Nope.
They just want to buy in and go along for the ride based on the fact that the guy's popular.
Yep, we'll be right back. Don't go away. website, worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. My guest is Tom Littleton. Tom is the guy that runs 30piecesofsilver.org.
Yes.
30piecesofsilver.org. We're going to open up for phone calls here in just a little bit. But again, we're going back to the idea of the three-legged stool that Rick Warren's been promoting for years. You guys heard him earlier in the broadcast. Public-private partnerships with faith. And then he called them government houses of worship. And then he talked about the three-legged stool. Again, these are all the things we've been warning about for years. And that's why I wrote Grave Influence, Religious Trojan Horse, The Coming Religious Right, Marxianity. Because we know these guys want to hijack the church and use religion for their own goals and purposes. And you mentioned Tim Keller and the fact that Francis Collins, who's now he's about to leave NIH, was working with Tim Keller. I mean, there's another guy we tried warning about. We kept getting kicked in the teeth. Yet, yeah. It's very obvious what Tim Keller's about. He wrote it in his books. He was influenced by the Frankfurt School, group of Marxists, and that he wants social justice. He openly calls that,
right.
He wants to call it generous justice, but it's social justice.
Exactly.
And he's pushing the idea of the public-private partnerships himself.
Yeah, and he's a disciple of the same organization with Leadership Network, the same influences with Drucker. So obviously, these guys came, from the same gene pool. And then they've had these associations, a long time pushing the global narrative. And so we see this manifesting itself in church planting, which Keller has done a lot of, in curriculum and books, Christian books that they put out. And then also in general with their flirtatious participation in some of these outside the church organizations like the World Economic Forum. They sort of become the de facto representatives of Christian faith by their presence in those organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'm trying to get the audio to come back on, but for some reason, the audio is not coming back on for my clips with these guys. But this again is not surprising that we're seeing the mixture of government and religion. With the big government, big business, and religion mixing. Because as I've warned the audience, this is what we see in Revelation 17 and 18. It clearly describes the public-private partnerships with a religion mixed in. But the question again is, why are so many churches buying into it? And what it turns out to be for many of them now, it's about money.
Right.
You came to town to film shows, and one of the first things you said to me was, holy cow, look at that humongous Southern Baptist church. And
near my hotel.
Yeah, and what did the Southern Baptist Church have? What were they doing up front?
They had this massive sign, like a big construction sign that was flashing that they were doing the COVID vaccine boosters.
Mm-hmm.
And you said they've been involved in this since the testing.
Since the very beginning, they had that traffic sign out there to pull it.
Beautiful campus, beautiful church, big. And
what do you think is driving that church? I'll tell you what I think is driving it. That church, that Southern Baptist Church, big Southern Baptist Church, right, real close to where we're broadcasting from right now. They used to be big, and they went through multiple pastors. They kind of run them through there like a turnstile. They run so many of them through there. And that church went from many thousands to now hardly anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you saw what a huge campus it is, right?
Right.
So can you imagine the heating bill and the air conditioning bill and the keep up of those grounds?
Yeah, and the salaries.
The salaries. Staff, so what do you think is driving that church to do this? If their numbers have dropped, their giving's dropped, I guess they have to, this is my opinion, they have to go looking for another revenue source, right?
Right.
And what do you think is going on there? You think they're letting all that go on there for free?
No, and I also don't think that they're preaching the gospel while they do it, because if they're engaged in faith-based partnerships, that's not possible. They can't use
those. That's a violation of the law.
Right.
They would lose their government money.
They cannot proselytize. They can't give out any religious material, engage in any explicitly religious activity. So sad to say these guys are giving up a lot and getting something in return, but it's certainly not more opportunity for the gospel.
So, Logan, did you just fix my speakers?
Your sound is muted.
What, my sound was muted?
Your computer was muted.
My computer was muted. Well, again, I'm an old guy. I keep Logan around for one reason. Not only is he good as everything else, he can keep my devices here working.
Well, us older guys need these young guys around.
You hear him chuckling?
Yeah.
I think that was a mocking chuckle. I think that was the old man may be smart, but in some ways he's kind of dumb.
Yeah,
he can't even unmute his own speaker.
Well, I'm more challenged, much more technology challenged than you, so I can't say anything.
I get it. I used to be young once. All right, so... this is a clip. Let me play this clip, Logan. This is a clip I've had on my website behind our VIP wall for years. For years. Here is Rick Warren at the Clinton Global Initiative. So again, we were trying to warn about this years ago. I had articles, by the way, that I went and looked at on my website, warning about Rick Warren with the World Economic Forum dating back to 2008, 9, and 10.
Yep.
Okay? So we were warning about him and the World Economic Forum back then. Nobody knew what the World Economic Forum was, really. Certainly not most conservative talk show hosts. They weren't paying attention to any of this. Now a lot of the conservative talk show hosts are saying, uh-oh, there seems to be a really big religious element to all this.
Yeah.
And they're waking up to this. And they're shocked by some of the comments they're making. They're like, we're really shocked. We, you know. So here is, and I'm glad they're on board. I'm glad they're waking up to this. Listen to Rick Warren at the Clinton Global Initiative. If this will play. Why is everything, nothing's playing today? It's like the computer's sleepy. Well, it's not playing. Wouldn't you know it? I'll try to reboot that, see if I get it to play. Let's get ready to open the phone lines up. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347.
So right now,
there we go. Now it's going to play. Here we go. Let's try this. 1-800-347-9829. Let's go to that clip.
Through our peace plan, we are training both pastors and imams. And we are training leaders, actually volunteers, from both the mosques and the churches that are coming together to say, how can we learn health care so we could care for the people in our congregations? The congregational unit, whether it's a Muslim congregation, a Jewish congregation, a Christian congregation, or whatever, is a basic unit you're going to find in every community. And that congregational unit is there to be mobilized for these global problems.
And people, yeah. And people might say to us, what's wrong with that, Tom? What's wrong with that? Why is that a problem?
Then this is the kind of stuff that God's people have always gotten in trouble doing, right? Mingling their faith with other faiths. And this is strictly forbidden because they're calling us to common ground. And then ultimately that leads us into searching for theological common ground. And then, of course, when you're in the mix with these globalist NGOs and organizations like his peace plan, there is a political agenda that's attached to that. There's a political agenda at the head of the parade. So you're actually being seduced into interfaith dialogue in a way that's going to make you serve the globalist agenda.
So it's fine if we want to get together with Catholics and Jews to fight abortion or the mandate on the shot. The problem is when we start trying to merge theologically, correct?
Right.
And then so we could be like Francis Schaeffer said, co-belligerents without, we don't have to discuss mm-hmm. theology, you know.
Right.
And a lot of this audience will notice I have people on and I never go into theology with them because I'm not going to sit here and have a kumbaya moment with them on theology. That's not what they're on. They're on as an expert on, as a doctor, national security guy, whatever. But the other issue is the problem with this. People say, well, what's wrong with using churches to do these things? The problem is as soon as you do this, you're giving up your autonomy, are you not?
Right.
Explain how.
And well, with the government funding, there is going to come all kind of government regulations, especially things related to non-discrimination, hiring, housing, access, all of these issues. And then you become a government contractor. When you take the government money, you come under the guidelines of, as a government contractor. And that status remains even after the money is long gone. And worst of all, you're deceiving your people in the church to becoming part of this big mobilization. You see that he said the church is there to be mobilized. So you're having to sell them on the false idea that this is the gospel or it's going to aid with the gospel. And so the church is being led off mission and onto serving the globalist agenda.
And of course, he admitted, Rick Warren did, that he was being mentored by Peter Drucker. For those who don't know, the great business guy, he was thought what people thought he was, his great business guy, right? Just-in-time inventory and all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah. The guy who ruined Sears.
Tell us how he ruined Sears. Yeah, that's a good story.
Well, he convinced the head of Sears that he needed to put all of his fortune into philanthropy, and then, of course, that all disappeared before the present model was working. But he brought in his business management model into Sears, and, you know, the lingering effects of what that did to their retail model was certainly a big boost for Walmart and some of the competitors who ate their lunch after that. So it ruined the biggest retailer of the time. And, of course, I think General Motors, he came in, and they threw him out. They didn't care for his thinking, but he circled back around and found a place, this whole idea of corporate conscience, corporate give back. It's really just socialist economics.
And we have him in our books, Peter Drucker, who again mentored Rick Warren, Tim Keller, Bill Hybels, praising Fabian socialist John Maynard Keynes as the greatest economist.
Yep.
You know, so any wonder these guys, and then he said, oh, I realized we just couldn't get it done with the two legs. We're missing a third leg, the social sector, the private sector, the churches.
Right.
And so these guys are globalists that just said, you know what, we need to give this a veneer of, I mean, after all, religion is the opium of the people, right?
Right.
So let's give it a religious flair, and people will buy into it, thinking they're doing the work of God, building the kingdom of God on earth, and we'll con these people and they think they're working for building the kingdom of God, where they're going to be building the global system of Antichrist.
Right, and you're getting this big volunteer a group of willing participants and all their wealth and all the church's wealth as well.
And that's, why I wrote the book Marxianity as well, which, by the way, thousands of copies going out. Be patient. We're catching up. You saw all that was going out, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
You can testify.
Yeah, they're working.
We're working.
Yeah, they're working on it around
here.
But
you cannot fill those many thousands of orders in 2 days.
No.
So we are working.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed at all the empty boxes that are there that you guys are already processing. And then, of course, all the stuff you're waiting to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad the demand is high. This book needs to be read. These books all need to be used as resources, because what you're going to see is things that you were saying through the years are just unfolding before people's eyes every day.
And I'm not promoting this book to make money, because Marxianity, as you know, I sold it for $20 in the second printing. I said, fine, do a second printing, but $4.99, not 20.
Well, the name really says it all. It's probably the definitive book on the topic that's out there. And I mean, you really cover this ground concisely in a very readable, comprehensible way.
Terms.
Yeah, very much so. So anybody who reads it, suddenly you have a fresh lens with biblical clarity and historic perspective that can help people understand this stuff that's happening. And people, it is happening. This is coming to pass so fast. These guys are cinching this up, closing the deal on what they've been working on for decades.
And I quote you in the book as well, Tom, as you know. So again, I'm not promoting this because we're looking to make money, because it's $4.99. So by the time we print it and then we hire the folks to pack it up, and of course, as you know, you got to pay people today $15 an hour just to work. So by the time we pay people to pack it up and send it out, this is not about making money. The second printing was simply about trying to give it away, really, at a cheap price to get as many copies out there, hoping many people would order quantities to understand what it is we're talking about here. So again, you can get a copy for $4.99 at wvwtv.com/store. wvwtv.com/store. Marxianity, how the evangelical deep state and their useful idiots are merging Marxism and Christianity through social justice, white privilege, cultural Marxism, illegal immigration, interfaith dialogue, and more. Let's go to the phone lines. The phone lines are lit up. Let's go to Greg in Minnesota. Greg, thanks for calling in today. Line one, Greg. Hey, Greg.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just have a comment about Rick Warren, well, his book especially. As a young believer, I went to a church and they used that book, The Purpose Driven Life, which I thought was kind of fishy, but they used it for a so-called Bible study.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Well, and what's interesting about that is I have to go back and check my notes, but he uses a lot of translations of the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, in the teens.
Conveniently.
Conveniently, he uses in the teens the number of translations he keeps using.
We just find the one you want to say what you're trying to
exactly
say.
Exactly what he was
as
doing.
You twist it.
He was using such loosey-goosey translations, he could get the translations to say what he wanted. He was quoting all kinds of mystics in there, by the way. Mystics, Fabian Socialist. I don't know why these pastors didn't go through the book and say, who is he quoting, and look it up. You'd find it real fast. Great call, Greg. We'll be back with more. All right, so yes, it was. It was a Time Magazine article. I finally found it, where he talks about working with SDS in the '60s, and it was a Time Magazine, August 2008, marching around the courtroom, a courthouse, a march for the Marxists, SDS in the 1960s. And I could not find, and I report that in one of my books, and that's Rick Warren I'm talking about. And I could not find anywhere where he ever denounced the Students for Democratic Society, SDS. Yeah. And then, of course, this is Jim Wallace, and all these guys have come into the, quote, church, right? Mm-hmm. So no wonder we're getting what we're getting. But again, you dare mention it years before it becomes obvious, and you're going to get kicked in the teeth, blackballed, and just ridiculed up one wall, down the other. But that's okay. That's you know, being doing what we're doing is not, you don't do what we do if you want to be popular.
Right, right.
And, we figured that out a long time ago.
Right, and you could get blacklisted. You know, you're going to be called out on Matthew 18. Yep. You're slandering this good brother.
Right.
I mean, those things are so standard, but the truth still matters, you know, and it's kind of hard to erase the facts when they're there.
Absolutely. Let's go to Dominique from Wisconsin, line 3. Dominique, thanks for calling in.
Hello. I just think it's so exciting that you got to meet President Trump. That's super exciting. I wanted to ask you, so I love President Trump for many reasons, but as Tom Runn says, Attorney Tom Runn says, that Operation Warp Speed produced something that's killing people and children, and he needs to turn it around instead of promoting it. Were you able to have any time to talk with him about some of the science of the dangers of the shots and also to warn him not to take the boosters?
No, we did not do that. Let me put it this way, because there's private conversations and then there's a public television conversations. But I will tell you that there is a strong statement that was made to us by him about his great concern of people having the shot forced on them, the mandates. He was very, very adamant that there should not be mandates and people should not be forced.
Right.
So I will say, I can say that because, again, I have to be careful between the private conversations that you don't, you know, that you're not disrespecting, you know, privacy and confidence, and then the public, what you'll see online. But I can tell you he was very adamant against any of these mandates and COVID passports and that kind of thing, that there should be the freedom to choose.
And I think he's been outspoken about the boosters, too. He's not in support
like
of
why
boosters.
Like, why do we need to keep having all these
boosters?
Yeah, right. Right?
Well, it looked more like a for-profit venture.
I think he said something about it being about money.
Yeah.
About being about money. Let's go to line 4. Zach, thanks for calling in. Zach, go right ahead.
Hi. So I got a question. And so since these jabs are meant to hack the software of life, doesn't that mean anyone who's gotten it is going to be controlled at some point?
Well,
and Trump's gotten the jab, so you know, I'm kind of, you know, I have, you know, trust and concerns about going forward. Anybody who's gotten these.
Well, and I don't know how much control we're talking about right now in this first level. My bigger concern right now is the spike proteins and what it can do to your health. I don't know where we're at yet with the technology to actually be able to use any of these vaccines to control you right now. Down the line, very concerning, because we have them on video talking about hacking the software of life and all these kind of things. Right now, my bigger concern is the vaccines, quote vaccines, and what they could do to someone's health because of what's in them, the graphene oxide, the spike proteins, that kind of things. What say you, Tom?
Yeah, and just the fear-mongering coercion that we see going on the surface, even if we don't see these things develop that have a more sinister edge in their indications, globally we're seeing people being forced into a mode of fear that I've never seen in my lifetime. And of course, the numbers aren't there to support the level of fear and the kind of response, the radical economic impact that all of this stuff has done. And then they're ignoring a lot of proven science like herd immunity and natural immunity. I mean, for a whole year, we didn't hear any of that in the conversation at all. It was not allowed. And only recently have people begun to allow that in secular media, talk about it. And so there actually been a couple of people confronted Fauci about that. Where was the proven science for a year? Then it was completely removed.
Well, and I'm pleased to announce that after a few years of wanting to get this done, Roger Stone and another individual has Dr. Judy Mikovits, Roger Stone, a collection of them, have helped me to secure a one-hour interview for TV this week with Robert Kennedy Jr. And this is going to be an excellent interview about his new book on Fauci. Now, this is another perfect example, Tom, where we can interview someone. I do not agree with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on many issues politically, that's for sure. But we certainly agree on these things about the vaccines, and I have promoted some of his articles and website and positions on these and research and science for a long time. And this is a perfect example where we can bring an expert on. We don't have to agree about everything, but we can agree about what we do agree about and get to the facts. And, you know, I don't, obviously, Mike Lindell and the attorney Alan Dershowitz openly state all the time, you know, we don't agree politically, you know. He has said right here on TV, you know, I voted for Hillary Clinton. So Dershowitz and Lindell will openly say, we don't agree, but on this fight for the First Amendment, we both agree.
Right.
And so it's that kind of thing as well. We can, as broadcasters, as journalists, as researchers, we can interview people that we wouldn't agree on many, many issues. But where we do agree, let's grab their expertise. And this book by Robert Kennedy Jr. Is going to and is expose. It comes out November 16th officially, exposing Fauci. It is going to be a major book, and I'm glad to have our interview this coming Thursday. You want to comment on that before we go back to the phones?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Fauci is overdue. This guy was a tyrant, and even in the AIDS investigations, research in the early days, he's called Tony Baloney by some within the Beltway. So
brags about his fascist or his Jesuit training.
Right, and so the guy has a far bigger reputation than he deserves.
Brag. Yep. Let's go to line one. Ron, thanks for calling in. Ron, go ahead, Ron. Hey, Ron.
Yeah, I was just wondering why all the lies are being told out there.
About what?
What was the deal when everybody was getting the polio shots? Nobody complained then. Now you want to complain because you get a shot for a virus?
So are you for the shot or against the shot?
I'm for the shot.
Okay. Ron, how much television have you watched with Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Lee Merritt, Dr. Napute, Dr. Artis? Have you watched any of that?
Just fools.
Yeah. Ron, are you a doctor, Ron? Ron, are you a medical doctor, Ron?
Are you a medical doctor?
Do you know what I interview them all the time. Do you know what graphene oxide is, Ron? No, you don't.
No,
of course you don't, Ron. But thanks for calling in. All right, guys, take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.